Okay, tonight we are beginning a topic which I call Halachic Men. The topic of Halachic Men is, this is actually my summer project, so I thank you for indulging me. This is the way rabbis have fun. What I'd like to do is try to understand a little bit about the history of the people around whom the halacha is based. Now, generally speaking, history is not studied in yeshivas. Right? Generally speaking, in yeshiva, I'll study Shulchan Aruch, but I'm not going to question and analyze who the Beis Yosef was. Not only is the history of the particular figure not studied, but history is not studied at all in the traditional curriculum. If you'll go into almost any Beis Medrash in the world, you will see a shelf of Chumash Svarim, and you'll see a shelf of Gemara Svarim, and you'll see Halacha, and you'll see probably at the bottom somewhere, a little corner, a little bit about Jewish philosophy, maybe like one or two Svarim, and Jewish history does not exist at all in the traditional Beis Medrash. Jewish history is studied once a year, and that is on Tisha B'Av. You sit on the floor, you cry, you talk about Jewish history. That's Tisha B'Av. But the rest of the year we don't talk about Jewish history. I think it's unfortunate. Because, to my mind, if I want to understand Halacha properly, that's important. But I understand it much better when I know where these figures come from, what influences they had in their lives. That's introduction part one. Introduction part two is, the history of Halacha and the figures that we're dealing with is particularly complicated because there is very little written about it. There are a few histories written about the Beis Yosef, written about the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, 1488 to 1575, top line. I give you sources over here from Wikipedia, right? Now, almost everything that I quote here is either definitely wrong or probably wrong. Okay? And we really know very, very little about the history. Those who tried to do history of Rabbi Yosef Cairo focused on one specific element of his life. According to tradition, and you'll see it here in the Wikipedia, here, turn to the second page. In a dramatic testimonial of Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz is the author of L'cha Dodi. Right? This is quoted by the Shlach HaKadosh at the beginning of Masechah Shavuos. He testified that in Salonika, Rabbi Yosef Cairo had become one of the rare individuals who merited to be instructed by a Magid, a private angelic teacher who revealed to him many Kabbalistic teachings. Okay, so there is a book called the Magid Meisharim. The book Magid Meisharim is the teachings of this particular angelic type figure who would come to Rabbi Yosef Cairo when Rabbi Yosef Cairo got involved in the study of Mishnayos. Rabbi Yosef Cairo, from a very young age, apparently knew Mishnayos by heart. And when he got very involved in the study of Mishnayos, and he was saying them by heart, so then this angelic figure would come to him and would teach him Kabbalah. That is the tradition of the Magid Meisharim, and Wikipedia, Shlita, quote, that the Magid says, I am the Mishnah that speaks in your mouth, etc. When he got involved in learning Mishnayos, so it's the Mishnah that comes and speaks to him. Beautiful, very nice. The historians focus heavily. There's a book by Werblowski called Rabbi Joseph Cairo, Lawyer and Mystic. Right? There is another book called Cairo's Magid. These are the two big history books about Rabbi Yosef Cairo. It is almost all about the Magid. Right? Now, a few issues. Issue number one is, the Rabbi Yosef Cairo I know and love has nothing to do with the Magid Meisharim. I didn't know the Magid Meisharim existed until, I don't know, I was probably 25. How many people here ever heard of that book, Magid Meisharim? Okay, so I guess I'm the ignorant one. But it certainly is not a staple of... How many people know anything that it says in the Magid Meisharim? Who? Hey? Okay.
I went to the book Blavatsky.
You read Murblavsky's book, so you know about the migration because you read Murblavsky's book. But the fact is, certainly, it's not mainstream. Not only is it not mainstream, the Magen Meshurim is printed 80 years after the Beis Yosef passes away. The Beis Yosef's children wrote about his life. No one quotes that the Maggid came to him. It could be it's true. Apparently, at this generation in Sfat, many of the big Talmidei Chachamim had these angelic figures like a Maggid who comes to them. It could be it's true. I'm not saying it's not true, but we don't know that the Maggid Meisharim is about the Beis Yosef. We really have no evidence. The Chidah in the Shem HaGadolin quotes that it's about the Beis Yosef, but he also quotes that the Magen Meshurim is only 1/50th of the teachings in Kabbalah the Beis Yosef had. But Lemaisa, we know very little about the Kabbalistic part of the Beis Yosef's life. This whole Magen thing certainly is not what we're going to be focusing on. It's, to my mind, a sidelight, an interesting sidelight, but it's not the real focus. Who was Rabbi Yosef Karo that we care about? Rabbi Yosef Karo is the author of Shulchan Aruch. On his tombstone, it says, "Here is buried Rabbi Yosef, the son of Ephraim Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch." That is the totality of the tombstone. If you look at Wikipedia, they make a million mistakes. There's a picture of a tombstone, and it says, "Here is buried Rabbi Yosef, the son of Yitzchak Karo." That's a different guy. That's not our Rabbi Yosef Karo. I have no... It's unbelievable that like peer review is supposed to be almost as accurate, but fun. So, I'm supposed to fix it. Thanks. Okay. But the fact is, it's really... So, the person we're going to talk about is Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. We know when he died. He died in the year 1575 on the 13th of Nisan. That we know. People were around. Rabbi Yosef Karo, by the time he dies, is a supremely important figure. Everybody knows, had a huge levaya. Fine. We know when he died. When was he born? Well, it says here 1488. How do we get that number? We get that number because around 100 years after Rabbi Yosef Karo died, there is a history book called Korei Hadoros that is written. And the Korei Hadoros quotes, "Eidos mi b'nei ha-mishpacha," this is testimony from family members, that Rabbi Yosef Karo lived for 87 years. Now, okay, it's something, but we don't know much. So, let's assume that the Korei Hadoros is right, he's born in 1488. Where is he born? We don't know. State in Wikipedia. So Wikipedia says that he's born in Toledo, Spain in 1488. That may or may not be true. We really don't know. We do know that the family left Portugal with the expulsion of Portugal in 1497. We don't know if they, together with many Jews, had left Spain, gone to Portugal, and then left right? In other words, the expulsion from Spain is in 1492, right? We don't know if the family had gone from Spain to Portugal and then was expelled from Portugal in 1497 or whether they had been in Portugal the entire time. We just don't know. But we know the family was expelled from Portugal in 1497. There is evidence to that. And there's a Sefer Rabbi Yitzchak Karo, who is Rabbi Yosef Karo's grandfather. Right? He talks about the family being in Portugal and being expelled in 1497. So that we know. Next point. We do not know anything about Rabbi Yosef Karo between 1497 and 1509. We have no idea where he really was. There is no evidence whatsoever. In 1509, we know he is in Egypt. His father, Rabbi Ephraim Karo, who was a big Talmud Chacham, who the Beis Yosef quotes in three different places, right? Rabbi Ephraim Karo was a Rav of a community in Egypt in 1509, that we know. But between 1497 and 1509, we don't know where the family was. We know, after 1509, the next date that we know is 1522, when Rabbi Yosef Karo is already in Turkey, in a city called Andrapanol. Then he moved to a city called Nicopolis in Turkey. Right? And in 1522, an important thing happened, right? He started, again, Wikipedia quotes Edirne. I don't know anything about the Turkish map where anything is. So the fact is, we know that in 1522 he starts writing the Beis Yosef. That we know. Beis Yosef is the work that he writes on the tour. Okay? This is the tour. The tour is many volumes. Right? This version is 22 different volumes of tour. Right? The tour is written by Rabbi Yaakov ben Usher, the tour. On the side of the tour is the Beis Yosef. The tour presents many different positions of Rishonim on each halakhic question. And the Beis Yosef goes and he gives you the source. He tells you it comes from the Gemara over here. And this person says this, this person says this, this person says that. He gives you all of the rabbinic literature until that date. This is the Beis Yosef. He began writing it in 1522. It takes him 20 years to write the Beis Yosef. In 1542, he's done. It's published 1550. Right? He edited it. There's another book called the Bedek HaBayis, where the Beis Yosef updated his Beis Yosef. Certain Sfarim that he didn't have full access to when he wrote the Beis Yosef first, he had when he wrote the Bedek HaBayis, including the Zohar. In the Beis Yosef proper, you do not see that many references to Zohar. In Bedek HaBayis, again, this is something that the scholars just don't note, but the Bedek HaBayis, you see many references to Zohar. Again, the famous one that comes to mind is the discussion of whether the worst Aveira in all of Torah is Hotsa'as Zera Levatola. That is a line from the Zohar that's quoted in the Bedek HaBayis, not quoted in the Beis Yosef. That, right? So again, this is one important point. So now we have Rabbi Yosef Karo in 1522 beginning to write the Beis Yosef. He finishes in 1542. Between 1522 and 1542, something happened. He moves from Turkey to Tzfat. 1536, he moves to Tzfat. Wikipedia has about 1535. Okay, it's close enough. He goes to Tzfat then. En route, he spent several years in Salonika and Istanbul. Absolutely false. He tells you it's false. He tells you that he spent some time in Salonika. And in Salonika, he met the great Goyin, who, according to the Chidah, was supposed to write the Shulchan Aruch. But because the Beis Yosef wrote it, he didn't. And that was Reb Yosef Titachak. The Beis Yosef calls Reb Yosef Titachak, Marit Titachak, he calls him. He calls him Hilchos Mikvaos extensively about some of the most complicated cases, about a Mayon that goes into... a Mayon is a... not a mikvah. A mikvah is a hole in the ground that's filled up with rainwater. A Mayon is a wellspring. A Mayon should be kosher for a mikvah. If it is, there's some human involvement, then a Mayan becomes puzzle. There's a question over there, a very complicated case. I have a Mayan that goes into a keli, that flows into a utensil. Can I toivel in that? So that is a huge essay that Kosa Marit HaTachak. I remember when I was in the Kollel, one of my friends decided to give a chabura about this. The only person I had any idea what he was talking about was Rabbi Rosenzweig. Everybody else was like, okay, this is beyond me. But Rabbi Yosef Titachak is in Salonika. Rabbi Yosef Titachak is a great Talmud Chacham. He also, according to tradition, had a Maggid that came to him. Okay? That is Marit Titachak. That is Salonika. What? Salonika is in Turkey. Right? But he passes through Salonika on his way to Tzfat. Right? Greece. Thank you. It's in Greece, yeah. What? Ottoman Empire. Right. Now, according to tradition, or I shouldn't say according to tradition, according to some of the historians, when Rabbi Yosef Karo went through Salonika, he met another important figure. And that is Reb Shlomo Molcho. Okay? Reb Shlomo Molcho is one of the great mysterious figures in Jewish history. Many people felt he was Mashiach. He went to the Pope, and the Pope potentially... the Pope killed him, basically. The Pope sentenced him to death because he was a possible Mashiach. He had a Navi, David HaRuveni, who was probably an absolute quack. It could be that Reb Shlomo Malfa was a great tzaddik, and David HaRuveni was an absolute quack. But Reb Shlomo Malfa dies on Kiddush Hashem, and he led a huge messianic fervor. Now, this is very understandable. Jews have just been expelled from Spain and then Portugal. Things are not going good for the Jews. A lot of people decide they're making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. They have this figure who comes, who thinks he's Mashiach. The whole world gets very excited. That's Reb Shlomo Malfa. Those who try to champion the Beis Yosef as a great Kabbalist focus very heavily on the meeting between him and Rabbi Shlomo Malfa. That is focused on extensively here. Let's turn to the Magid Meisharim on the last page. The Magid Meisharim, remember, we spoke about this a few minutes ago. This is the Magid that comes to the Beis Yosef. So the Magid tells him on the fifth day of Nisan in the year Shin Gimel. Right? What's Shin Gimel? So the trick is, Shin Gimel is Gematria 305. If you want to figure out what year it is, you add 1240.
303.
Huh? 303. Thank you. You add 303 to 1240, and you get?
1542-1543.
Okay? So in 1542-1543 is when this entry in the Kabbalistic diary is written. Ya'an ki masarta nafshecha chazar satar ha-smicha li-yoshna. We'll talk about this a little bit later. Because you, Rabbi Yosef Kaur, tried to bring smicha back. Tizka liyot musmach mikol chachmei Eretz Yisrael mechachmei chutz la'aretz. You will deserve to get smicha. Now, va'al yadcha achzir ha-smicha li-yoshna. And through you, I will return smicha to the way it used to be. This is important. Smicha that I have is a fake, no? Smicha that every rabbi has today is a fake. Right, the real smicha has to come from Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Like the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Moshe kibbutz Torah miSinai, gives it to Yehoshua, Yehoshua is a kingdom, etc. Right, straight down the line. During the persecutions in Roman times, we stopped giving smicha. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Yudalad tells us that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was Moser Nefesh to give smicha to five Talmidei Chachamim, to five of the Tanoim, but Lamais at some point, the smicha wore off. Again, the smicha did continue a little bit later. Some of the Amorim in Eretz Yisrael had smicha. The Amorim in Bavel definitely did not have smicha. You can't give smicha in Bavel, but at some point smicha ended, and we no longer had smicha. There was a movement, based on the Rambam that we'll talk about, to return the smicha back. There's a movement to return smicha. Says the Magid to the Beis Yosef, because you're Mosa Nefesh for smicha, you deserve to get smicha. According to tradition, the Beis Yosef got smicha. This isn't just according to tradition. This we have evidence for in the debate over smicha. Maharal Bach, Reb Levi ben Chabib, who's the Rav in Yerushalayim, who was the great opponent of smicha. So he writes one of his letters is to the Beis Yosef, and he says, you're defending smicha, apparently you got smicha also because Maharibe Rav, who was the first person who got smicha, gave you smicha right before he ran away to Damascus. He gave you smicha, but you should know that your smicha is absolutely meaningless. So we know that the Beis Yosef got smicha, we know the Mabit got smicha, there are two other people who got smicha from Maharibe Rav. We're not exactly sure who they are. According to some, one of them was the Ramach, was Ramosha Cordovero, who is the father of non-Lorianic Kabbalah. Right? That is... So, the point is, says the Magid, you will get smicha. V'tistale kamar naki, and you will leave the world like pure, clean wool. V'tizge l'tchiyat hametim, and you will merit chiyas hamesim, v'tiyame osam shenema aleihem, eila l'chaya olam haba, ובכן ואתה שלום. ותמיד תשווה קדם אינך כי אי ושמה דהווה יקוסה בדיו, etc. You should always imagine that God's name is written in front of you with dio. Many Kabbalists have this practice, that they have a piece of parchment with God's name on it, and they always look at the end of davening. Fine. ואיך זה גרם אך כאילו אבך קם לקבלך, ואיך תיבוש ותקלם, מלספק להרהור דליבך, etc., etc. And he writes in this section that you will merit, just like Shlomo Avdi died on Kiddush Hashem, you will also die on Kiddush Hashem. That's the next section here in this piece that apparently didn't get copied. So now, the Maggid is telling him that just like Shlomo Avdi died on Kiddush Hashem, you will die on Kiddush Hashem. Some assume that that refers to Shlomo Molcho. It's not clear. It might have referred to someone else named Shlomo. It also might not have meant, that line might not mean that he died on Kiddush Hashem. It might refer to Rav Shlomo Al-Kabet. We really don't know very much. But I'm digressing. So let's go slowly. 1522 begins reigning Beis Yosef. 1536 goes to Eretz Yisrael. In 1538, in Eretz Yisrael, is the Great Smicha Controversy. Mahari Bei Rav, in Tzfat, decides that he wants Smicha for himself, the real Smicha. Now, the real Smicha, as opposed to fake Smicha, enables you to levy knossos, to give fines on people. Real Smicha enables you to kill people, if you so want. A Sanhedrin can kill with real smicha. Real smicha allows you to give malchus, to give lashes. That's what real smicha does. Mahari Bei Rav wants the real smicha for himself. 1538, he decides he's going to bring the Sanhedrin back to give him smicha and to restore the smicha. And this is based on a Rambam. Just to go through this very quickly, because it's an important element in Rabbi Yosef Karo's life, and then we'll talk about the real Rabbi Yosef Karo. Says the Rambam, you see where it says the Smicha controversy, right? The Rambam writes, Harish lo haya be'eretz Yisrael el somech echad. If you have only one person who has Smicha, so he could take two other people with him, v'somech shivim ke'echad, O zeh achar zeh, v'achar kach yaseh hu v'ashivim bezen ha'gono v'yismuchu bati din machim. In other words, basically he could have one person with two others, and they could give Smicha to a real person. Fine. In other words, you don't need all three members of the Beis Din to have smicha, says the Rambam. Only one member needs smicha. Kama, semicolon. Nirin li hadavarim. This is a rare expression in the Rambam. When the Rambam says nirin li hadavarim, the Rambam is saying, it appears to me, that usually means that the Rambam is coming up with his own idea. Although, ordinarily, when the Rambam comes up with his own idea, he uses a different expression. He uses yira'eli. Here he says, nirin li hadavarim. You get an impression there might be some source that the Rambam is extrapolating from. But the Rambam writes, She'im hiskimu kol ha'chochomim she'eretz Yisrael l'manos dayonim v'lismoch osam harei elu smuchim v'yesh lahem ladun dine knasos v'yesh lahem lismoch acherim. Right? Again, this is on next to last page. Right? The Rambam writes that if all of the chachomim in Eretz Yisrael decide to appoint somebody, so that person gets the real smicha, and then he can give smicha to others. Im kein lama hayachachom mitzdarma smicha, kidei shlo yivatlu dine knasos mi Yisrael, lepi shiso mefuzarin, v'yashar shiaskimu kulam, v'ma yisham samach mi pi samach, eino tzarech das kulan, elodan dine knasos l'kol, sharei nismach mi pi betin. In other words, the Rambam says, if all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael get together, they can reinstitute smicha. All the Israeli rabbis get together. So then he asks, so how come everyone's so worried about losing smicha? So he answers, well, the Jewish people dispersed, and no one could agree. You can't get, right? That's an important principle in Judaism. They won't all agree. And therefore, people are very worried about smicha. But according to the Rambam, you can bring smicha back. But then he finishes off with three words, that this requires balancing. We're not really convinced of this. So now, the story is like this. The Rambam tells us that you can bring smicha back. Some assume that the Rambam, when he says nirin li hadavarim, he's really based on the source. The Gemara in Erevin, on Daf Mem Gimel, speaks about how Eliyahu Hanavi, when he will appear to herald Mashiach, will come in front of the Bezdin HaGadol, come from the great Bezdin, and the great Bezdin HaGadol will say, oh, that's Eliyahu, we remember him. So everyone asks a question, one second, Eliyahu comes before Mashiach, maybe, possibly, there's a contradiction in the Rambam and the Psukim, but if we don't have a real Bezdin now, so how's Eliyahu going to come in front of the real Bezdin? So they say, well, obviously that Gemara indicates, like the Rambam, that you can bring the real Bezdin, the real Smicha back. Maharibe Rav wanted to get the real Smicha. Based on this Rambam, he says he'll gather all the Chachamim Meretz Yisrael to give him Smicha, and he did this in Sfat. He gave himself Smicha 1538. That's the story. Now, he gathered all the rabbis in Sfat. He didn't gather the rabbis in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Levi ben Chaviv is in Yerushalayim, and he's very upset that how come he wasn't invited to the great Smicha party. So therefore, he says, you know what? Not only should I have been invited, but the fact that you didn't invite me indicates that your entire smicha is null and void because you need all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. Ich bin a Rav Eichet, I'm also a rabbi. I'm sorry. Obviously, you said it in Yiddish. I'm sorry, but that's it. Right? So, the Maral Bach basically opposed the smicha, and there, in the Tshuvas of the Maral Bach, there's a back and forth about the smicha. Some of the issues that get involved is when the Rambam says Hadavar Tzarech Hechreya, is the Rambam saying I'm really uncertain about this, or does the Dover Tzarech Hechreya that the Rambam means in terms of that those people present, it's almost Wahavdo, like what's it called when they appoint a new pope, that you have all the cardinals together and they choose one of them to become the next pope. So the smicha process might work like that. They're going to choose one of them to become the first samach. Hadavar Tzarech Hechreya. They have to balance who that guy is, who's the greatest. Fine. Maharibe Rav got his smicha. It was not really accepted, but Maharibe Rav gives smicha, right, to four people. We know who two of them are, the Beis Yosef and the Mabit. We don't really know who the other two are. Fine. So now, why did they want to give smicha? Why is the smicha so important? So the smicha is important again. Remember, this is after the expulsion from Spain, after the expulsion from Portugal. Many people, in the process of the Inquisition, converted to Christianity and served Avodah Zarah, and they felt very guilty about this. And they knew a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Makos, the chayiv krisus shalaku niftarim de krisusan, that if you're chayiv kares, you deserve the punishment called kares, and then you get lashes, so that exonerates you. That gets rid of your kares. So he said, we want to get lashes in order to free us from the aveira of serving Avodah Zarah when we were in Spain and Portugal. That was the story. And therefore, they really wanted the smicha. Now, there's huge problems over here, and they write this in the letters. In the letters that they sent to Yerushalayim to try to get the Maharal Bach and the other Rabbanim Yerushalayim to agree, they write, and we did this in order to give Malkus to the people. It's very questionable. You can't give Malkus unless there are witnesses there, and they tell you, don't do this. Right? The whole thing, people are going to come to Bez and they'll get Malkus, the whole thing makes, halachically, it's very problematic. The Chazon Ish has an essay about the smicha controversy. He writes that no one understands what exactly they were thinking in terms of giving the smicha. Halachically, it's very, very questionable. But, they didn't. Maharibe Rav had smicha, Rabbi Yosef Kara had smicha. Rabbi Yosef Kara himself gave smicha to the Al Shech HaKadosh. The Al Shech HaKadosh gave smicha to the Shlach. No. The Alshach gave smicha to, I forgot who. There's a fourth generation of the smicha that, No. I could find it, but there was a fourth generation of smicha. We just don't remember exactly, I don't remember who this person is who, the Alshech gave smicha to. I have it in my notes, I just have to find exactly where. Now, okay. Why is this important in terms of the life of the Beis Yosef? Well, we're trying to figure out this great figure, the Beis Yosef. What was he trying to do? Right? What's he trying to do? He's trying to write the halachic anthology, right? Beis Yosef. Then, after he publishes that, around 10 years later, he writes another work called Shulchan Aruch. why is he doing this? Like, what's going on here? That's what we have to figure out. Some suggest that the Beis Yosef was doing this because it's all part of his great effort to bring Mashiach. If the Beis Yosef is a great Kabbalist, and he's working very hard to bring Mashiach, and the Smicha is here to help us bring Mashiach, no? So then, one of the ways to bring Mashiach is by having all the Jewish people agree about something. So I'm going to write a halakhic code that everyone will agree upon, and that will bring Mashiach. That is the argument that Chaim Chernovitz makes in his Toldos HaPoskim. If I'd have time, I'd go through who Chaim Chernovitz was. Colorful figure, not for now. But that's the argument. That's the argument. So what we have is Smicha coming together with a effort to write the halachic text, and that will unify Klal Yisrael, and that will bring Mashiach. But this is all premised on the fact that we have a Kabbalistic type of Rav Yosef Karo, who's really working his entire life to try to bring Mashiach. If what we're saying is that there's really not much evidence of the Maggid, and the Reb Shlomo Mocho story may or may not have happened, and Rav Yosef Karo, even if he was a Kabbalist, but that was like a minor detail in his life, so I don't know if this entire thing is about the bringing of the Mashiach, and then we have to go back to what exactly Beis Yosef is. So let's take a step back. Two works are written. Beis Yosef, which is his Notes on the Tour. Very expansive, 22 volumes. Finished 1542, edited after, published around in the 1550s. Fine. Shulchan Aruch, written in... The Shulchan Aruch is written in 1555. It's printed in 1567 in Venice. That's the first printing of the Shulchan Aruch. Now, the work of the Shulchan Aruch is in some ways the opposite of the work of the Beis Yosef. Same guy, same author, but the two works are opposite. Beis Yosef is expansive. He tells you everything anyone ever said. No? And also, right, Beis Yosef really, Beis Yosef is just telling you everything anyone ever said. Beis Yosef is written as a commentary on the Tour, and it goes on and on and on, pages upon pages. Shulchan Aruch is apodictic. It's very short, like the baseball rule book almost, right? Do this. You wake up in the morning, this is how you wash an Egel Vassar. This is how you tie your shoes. This is what you do. This, do that, right? Short rules. Not only is it a different style, but it's a style that Rabbi Yosef Karo made fun of in his introduction to the Beis Yosef. The style that he wrote Shulchan Aruch in is something he really did not think kindly of at all. Let me hear. If you look in the Hakdama to Beis Yosef, you see it's the first Hebrew source. So the first paragraph in Hakdama to Beis Yosef, if I underline the part where he blesses God, okay, very nice. Vayehi ki archu lanu hayamim horaknu miklio kliu bagola halachnu. Right, we went into exile. Vekamat saros tsuros tchufos vitzaros zulazu ba'u aleinu. And we had one persecution after the other. Ad ki niskayim banu bavonosenu v'avdo chachmas chachomav, until we began to forget Torah. We're losing our wisdom. V'azos yada Torah v'lomdeh kilonasas ha-Torah kebeis toros elo kitoros ein mispar. Right, he's saying, the Gemara in Yevamos has an expression that we're worried that that's what Losis go to do. We shouldn't have different practices in the same community because it will look like there are two different Toros. Says Rabbi Yosef Karo, because of the exiles and the persecutions, it's not that it became two Toros, it's like dozens and dozens of Toros. They say that in Salonika, at this time, there are 30 different shuls keeping 30 different minhagim. Because Jews from all over the Spanish world are coming with their own minhagim. It's almost like Washington Heights, right? That each shul has its own little different set of minhagim. That's what's going on in Salonika. Says Rabbi Yosef Karo, Torah is becoming all diffused. Therefore, I'm going to write this book, Beis Yosef, his book on the Torah, his big book. And when I write this big book on the tour, what we will do is we will unify things to a certain extent. That's his goal. Instead of, right, he'll quote all of the poskim, but then he will come down with a conclusion so that people will know what to do. But he has to quote everything because he wants this book to appeal to all the 30 different synagogues in Thessalonica or etc. Fine. Then, turn to the next page, and this is what I was referring to before. The Im Yomar Adam, the underlined part. The Im Yomar Adam Nivchor B'Sifrei HaKotzrim Kismak V'HaAgor V'Kolbo. If a person wants to follow the small, concise works of Halacha, and he quotes three of them, the Smak, the Agor, the Kolbo, these are three Ashkenazic works of Halacha. The Emes, Shezu Derech Kitzara V'Aruka. This is a short way, but it's also much longer. Ki Me'olam Lo Yuchel LaDa'at Shum din kehochato. If you follow the sfarim that are brief halacha texts, you'll never know anything. You'll never know anything properly. Ubefrat the sefer agor, he really doesn't like the agor. Ki beharbi makomos, he quotes the Torah, and the language that he quotes requires carpenters to deal with it, etc. In other words, you have to bang it this way and that way. You have to, right? Basically, blacksmiths, whatever it is. Basically, the point is, he really does not like these Kitzer books. He doesn't like these abridged halacha texts. He likes longer versions of halacha. Really, he says, the proper way to do halacha would be to understand every din on its own, to go through the Gemara and all the Rishonim on each halacha, and to come down with what you think is correct. But, he says, that would take forever. And therefore, I'll give you a brief way of doing it, which is that we'll have the three big guns, Rambam, Rif, and Rush, the three biggest poskim, and we'll paskin like two of those three. Right? That's the paragraph v'lachim. The paragraph v'olah b'dati is the paragraph that says that really you should look into all the halachos on your own. L'chein hiskamti b'dati that there shlosh amudei ha-horarash ha-bayi yispeisi se'el nish'an alayhem b'horol sehem the Rif, Rambam, and Rush amarti olibi she'b'makom she'shnei mehem maskimim l'da'as echad nifsok halacha kemosam will paskin like the majority. If I have, right, two out of the three one way, that's how we'll paskin. And that's Beis Yosef. So Beis Yosef, long 22 volumes, basically is saying, this is everything that has been written over here, and I will follow the majority of the major opinions. If the major opinions don't express something, so we'll follow what is like the second tier major opinions, the Ran and the Rashba, etc. If they don't say anything, unclear exactly how he would follow the halacha. That's the Beis Yosef. He's telling you how to paskin every shaila. But then he writes Shulchan Aruch. What changed? How come he decides to write a Kitzer book when he himself doesn't like Kitzer books earlier? One question. Next question. Who is the intended audience of these books? Who's the intended audience? Who's the intended audience of Beis Yosef? Is it meant for rabbis or is it meant for laymen? Rabbis. 22 volumes meant for rabbis, clearly. Shulchan Aruch? So Shulchan Aruch, it's interesting. In the introduction to Shulchan Aruch, he writes as follows. Here, let's pick up again from where I underlined. Ki kasha yishalu l'tamud chocham dvar halacha lo yim gam geimba elo yom alo chochma achulti at kishim shebarilo shachoto asurilo kach yebarilo kodin shiyish al alav halacha lamase biyoto shagur befiv sefer ze habanui l'tal biyoto shachol tonim bo l'chalko l'chalakim shloshim l'lomo bo b'cho yom chelek. What's he saying? He's saying that I wrote this text, the Shulchan Aruch, and I divided it up into 30 sections, four volumes that we have, but you could really print it in one volume without all the commentaries. Divide up into 30 sections, so that every day of the month you study another section. And that way, the Talmidei Chachamim will review all the halachos very quickly. Shulchan Aruch is a review text. Nimsa b'chol chodesh hu chozer talmudo v'yomar alav ashrei mi shebalakan v'talmudo v'yado. Every month, I actually wanted to bring it in tonight, but my wife convinced me not to. I have at home a Shulchan Aruch that was printed in 1698. It's not one of the earlier editions of Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is from the 1567 onward, but it's divided up into 30 days. Right, that was the way it was done. You're supposed to learn one section every 30 days and review it. By the way, that's where the smack was broken down also. The smack was not broken down to 30 days, broken down to 7 days of the week. So just review that book every week. No? And that's how you'll keep abreast of halacha. Fine. Zos va'od. So, one intended audience of Shulchan Aruch are the scholars to review. Zos va'od. Ha-talmidim ha-ktanim yehagu bo tamid. Younger students will always study it. V'shananu l'shono al-peh. And they will memorize it. V'tiyeh girsa de-yankusa misudet b'fihem mekatnu sam halacha l'maaseh. V'gam ki yaskinu lo yasu mimenu. Moreover, the little kids, students, non-scholars, will also benefit from the Shulchan Aruch. So now what we have is as follows. He writes Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef is his halacha work. Right? If you want to know how to pass in the Shaila, don't look in Shulchan Aruch, he's telling you. Look in Beis Yosef. Right? But Shulchan Aruch is here to review. And Shulchan Aruch is also here. Right? If you're a Talmud Chacham, you review by going through Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is also here in order to what? If you're a little kid, you memorize the book and you know basic Judaism. That's what Shulchan Aruch is all about. Okay? So far so good? Now, this is very important. And I know I haven't answered my question yet. We're getting there. This is important la halacha because I think some of the poskim never read the Hakdama to the Shulchan Aruch. The Hakdama to Beis Yosef was printed in all the editions of Beis Yosef. Hakdama, the introduction to Shulchan Aruch, was not printed. It was not printed in the editions. It was printed in the first few editions. Then it wasn't printed again. My Shulchan Aruch at home that I got for my Bar Mitzvah doesn't have the introduction. The new Kabalkin Shulchan Aruch, the new black one, reprinted the introduction to Shulchan Aruch. The introduction to Shulchan Aruch was not read by many people. Consequently, they deal with the issue, what happens when Beis Yosef quotes something and he doesn't quote it in Shulchan Aruch? Does that mean that he changed his mind? Same author, Rabbi Yosef Karo, 1488 to 1575. He has something in the Beis Yosef, he doesn't repeat it in Shulchan Aruch. Does that mean he changed his mind? Let me give you an example very quickly. Look in the Beis Yosef here. This is the last Beis Yosef in all of Shulchan Aruch, last Beis Yosef in Choshen Mishpat. An interesting case, this is involved. Am I allowed to put myself in a potential danger in order to save you from a definitely dangerous situation? Kidney transplants today is that way, no? Am I allowed to donate a kidney? You are in a Vaday Sakana. You need a kidney. I got two of them. Right? It's potentially dangerous to go through surgery to lose a kidney. Are you allowed to do this? Right? So, Beis Yosef over here quotes from Hagos Maimoni. It's not the regular Hagos Maimoni. It's Hagos Maimoni from Constantinople. That the Birushalmi Masik, afilu lahachnis atma b'suffix hakana chayov, that you even have to put yourself into a suffix hakana to save somebody from a definitely dangerous situation. That's what the Beis Yosef quotes from the Hagos Maimoni Venera, and it appears to him that the reason is mnei hashahalov vaday v'hu suffix, because the other guy is definitely in a dangerous situation, and you're only in a suffix situation. Says the Sma. The Sma is the earliest commentary in Shulchan Aruch. The Sma, right, quotes over here, quotes that Agos Maimoni, that's quoted by the Beis Yosef, says that you're obligated to put yourself into a suffix sakana to save someone from a vade sakana. Right? And he quotes the entire Beis Yosef, Ad Kan Lashono, first three lines. And then the Sma writes, Gamze Hishmito Mechaber Umoram. This is left out by the Mechaber. It's left out by Rabbi Yosef Karo from the Shulchan Aruch, and it's left out by the Ramah. Ubezei yesh lo makim shaposkim harif haramah barash v'atura lo hevi opiskehen, mishum hachi hishmituhu gam kein, since it's not mentioned by the major poskim, therefore Shulchan Aruch left it out. In other words, the Sma is telling you that we don't paskin this way, that you're not allowed to enter a suffix sakana to save someone from a vade sakana. His proof is that Shulchan Aruch left it out. I would argue there is absolutely no proof from the fact that Shulchan Aruch leaves it out, because Shulchan Aruch is here to give you the basic halachos, right, that you're supposed to review once every 30 days, or for little kids, the things that you have to know. But it's not the complete work of halacha. The complete work of halacha is right there, is the Beis Yosef. Shulchan Aruch is not the complete work of halacha. The fact that he left it out does not mean he doesn't hold of it. Lahalacha. He really does hold of it. That's what I would contend. So now, let's go back. Beis Yosef, written in 1520s. Shulchan Aruch is written 1550s. Between 1520s and 1550s, what happened? He moved to Eretz Yisrael. What's the difference between life in Eretz Yisrael and life in Chutz La'aretz? In Chutz La'aretz, the Beis Yosef is writing this expansive code. In Eretz Yisrael, he is writing a very short code. No? What changed? Well, it could be the Mashiach element changed. It could be once he's in Eretz Yisrael and we have all this messianic fervor, he needs a more concise work to bring Mashiach. That could be. That's possible. Or it could just be that in Chutz La'aretz, his intention is he wants to unify all these different communities. Once they got to Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Yosef himself tells you in his Tshuvos that when people move from place to place, the minhagim that they used to keep should end. When you move to a place with an established community, you should accept on yourself the practices of that new community. So he doesn't have to write a book for 30 different communities with all of the sources. He just writes a series of dinim. That could be what changed. I don't know. There are many suggestions. There are many suggestions over here. Okay, so let's just review a little bit what we did tonight, and then we will make one more point. Rabbi Yosef Karo, we know very little about his youth. We know he dies in 1575. We also learned a bit about the Smicha controversy, how he himself got Smicha. Now, I should point out, even though he himself got Smicha, he never used his Smicha. Okay, if you'll look in the last source I have, Remember, one thing about Smicha is that you could give Malkus to people, right? Now, there is a discussion in Shulchan Aruch, and in Beis Yosef, okay, about on Erev Yom Kippur, do they do this in Breuers? I'm sure, right? That they give Malkus to people Erev Yom Kippur? Not that you know of. Okay, maybe because they give Malkus to people every day, so. But in certain communities, they still give Malkus Erev Yom Kippur, and that's the practice. The Beis Yosef, in his discussion of the Malkus that they give on Erev Yom Kippur, he writes that, you know what? Even though we don't really have Smicha anymore, but still, we give this Malkus on Erev Yom Kippur because it is what? It's a little bit of Malkus that will achieve a certain amount of Kapara. You'll get a certain amount of atonement through this Malkus. What do you mean we don't have Smicha anymore? He himself had Smicha! Right? So you can tell me, this is in Beis Yosef. And in Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't have it. In Shulchan Aruch, he does not quote that we're giving Malkus because we now have Smicha. He never uses the Smicha. One would have thought that in an effort to prove that my work is now the halacha work for the entire world, the fact that I have Smicha, right, would be a big feather in my cap. He never uses it. In other words, even though he may have gotten Smicha according to tradition, he doesn't use his Smicha. Why that is true, we don't know. Maybe because it didn't take hold, just practically. Or maybe because, and this is suggested by Jacob Katz, has an article in his book Halacha B'Kabbalah about the Smicha controversy and about the Beis Yosef's role in it. So Jacob Katz writes that he thinks if the entire goal of Smicha is to try to bring Mashiach, so then you don't have to do anything with the Smicha to bring Mashiach, you just have to have it. And that's why he doesn't do anything with it. Whatever it is, we don't know. But the fact is, he doesn't use his Smicha. So let's go back. So Smicha happens for Beis Yosef in 1540. Shulchan Aruch is written after. He's writing Shulchan Aruch after he already has his Smicha. He's already in Israel. And he's writing a very short work. A very short work. Unlike the Beis Yosef, that's a commentary on the Torah, which is a long commentary and a long work, the Shulchan Aruch is basically cut and paste from the Rambam. Now, when he wrote the Beis Yosef on the Torah, it was a deliberate decision that I'm writing on the Torah, not on the Rambam. The Torah is a much more expansive work. The Torah quotes many different opinions. And he wants to give you all of the different opinions. That's why he writes on the Torah. When he's writing on the Rambam, when he's writing Shulchan Aruch, he wants to give you one opinion, he quotes Rambam. And just like the Rambam doesn't give sources, Shulchan Aruch doesn't give sources. Hence, there was a huge movement that did not accept Shulchan Aruch after the book was written, because you can't paskin out of this type of book. There are no sources. You don't know where to look. You don't know what to do. And that's something that we'll talk about next time, the opposition to Shulchan Aruch. Okay? But what we are trying to do, again, is just understand, based on the little bit that we can. Now, I did not mention tonight, and I probably should have at the beginning, much of what I said tonight is from Isidor Twersky's article about the Shulchan Aruch. He deals with how come Rabbi Yosef Kara wrote on Tur, he chose his big work to be a work on Tur instead of on the Rambam. He deals with some of these issues. I put it together largely based on him, but some of the ideas are my own, including just this idea that I think Shulchan Aruch is a work for Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to Beis Yosef, that is a work for Chutz La'aretz, a work for a diaspora where things are spread out. That's what it seems to me. I thank you very much for coming, and next week we'll try to talk about the opposition to Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, etc.